This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com, home of the best tasting protein powder out there. Don't forget to mention the FitCast when you place your order. You can check them out at BlackStarLabs.com. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 197. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Jonathan Fast from JFastBiceps.com. John, how's it going?
That's right. JFastBiceps.com.
Did you like that?
I loved that, actually.
Situation.
And I was glad that the situation, yeah, I mean, it was just everything was like, it was that perfect moment for me. Clicking onto the FitCast.com and seeing that up, it was just like, I almost cried. I did almost cry. It was emotional.
Good. I'm happy. And that is what it's all about. When you can make that emotional attachment, it helps do things. So, anyways, we have a cool show lined up for you this week. What we're going to be doing is something a little bit different, mostly because my schedule is all over the place, and we are short one man this week. So what I thought it would be cool to do, and we got a lot of great feedback the last time that we did this, is doing an episode where we just do, like, you know, maybe two or three in-depth discussions about a subject, because again, you know, we got great feedback last time we did it. You guys really seem to enjoy it. And the one thing that I think we're going to try to stay away from is like inside baseball fitness industry stuff, because I think we did that a lot the last couple weeks when it comes to, you know, getting into the industry, or, you know, talking about when we talked about the paleo stuff last week and or the repackaging of nutrition. I think that is kind of in some cases inside baseball. So I think if you're okay with that, I think we'll probably stay away from that for the most part this week.
Sure.
So the first thing that we got a question about, and this is from an email that we got a couple weeks back, and it is about suspension training. And I know we have talked about it in the past, but this is someone that, you know, just picked up a TRX, but they have no idea what to do with it besides rows and hold on, let me pull up anything but rows and push-ups. So I think the first thing that we could do is kind of discuss, you know, suspension training in general, you know, what it's appropriate for, and also what you can use the TRX or blast straps for. And if people don't know, you know, basically with the TRX or blast straps, it's two handles that are attached to, you know, there's suspension straps, basically like rings. And the TRX itself was created by someone that was in the military, and they thought it would be great to use in boot camps and stuff like that. And for Army members that, you know, may not have a gym with them, it's something that they can attach anywhere and you'd be good to go. You remember if we talked with Chris Frankel probably about maybe almost a year ago now, and he talked a lot about this. So if you're more interested in the history of it, head back to that episode with Chris Frankel. I believe it should be pretty easy to find. I'll see if I can throw it in the show notes, but knowing me, I probably won't. So the first thing I think we should discuss after talking about the history is, you know, some of the reasons why you would use a TRX. And John, you know, it's not just for when you have no gym for yourself. It's also something that you're seeing in a lot of gyms now because of, you know, the applicability, especially when it comes to extra core activation. Like, that's one thing that they talk about and they try to hammer home at these, you know, the seminars or the presentations where the TRX guys do it, or they actually have like a TRX certification. But like, oh, you know, you can do a row at, you know, a chest supported row, or you can do an inverted row, but then you also have to, you know, make sure you're activating your core and squeezing your glutes to hold proper form. So, you know, when it comes to going in and just doing some different exercises, you know, John, why don't you talk a little bit about just the benefits of doing suspension training opposed to maybe just doing something where you are staying stable or you're supported on all fronts?
Yeah, I think it is. I've always kind of thought this was funny since I started finding out about the suspension training and stuff, because on the one hand, we don't like unstable surface training, but there does seem to be a little bit of a difference between upper body unstable surface and lower body, because we do have evidence that unstable surface training for the upper body does allow for greater co-contraction of like the rotator cuff assembly and shoulder stability and things like that. It's a great device. I think with a lot of things, from my opinion, my perspective is that you get something new, everyone is using it constantly for everything, and then probably in a couple of years it'll become just another part of your tool bag, you know, kind of like chains or kind of like, you know, blast straps and anything else like that that you can kind of use to augment your training. But like you said, I mean, it's a great tool. It adds another kind of piece and option to you. Instead of doing like a rollout, you can do a TRX rollout. You know, instead of doing a payoff press, you can do a TRX payoff press, things like that. And I think that it really does add another dynamic to the types of exercises that you're used to doing. When you buy the TRX, it does come with a CD. That's a really nice CD. It gives you a lot of exercise options and ideas and how to use it. And then there are a lot of things just on the internet, people being very creative that they're coming up with exercises and things that you can use for the TRX. And some of them, you know, a lot of it does come down, in my opinion, to a lot more of stabilizing and core stability, which is a good thing. And it really just offers in a completely different challenge. You know, even from the basic push-up to doing a push-up on like a Bosu or a stability ball versus the TRX, it's a very different experience. And it gives you a totally different type of feeling when you're doing your workouts. And it's a nice variable to throw in once in a while. I use the TRX for the most part for more like conditioning and ab work more than anything else personally. But I think that, like you said, I mean, for little to no gym equipment, it's very effective. And when even in a fully stocked gym, you've got a lot of options with it. I don't know. What do you use it for?
Sorry, someone sent me a message that there's a time travel movie on right now. That's nice. So the one thing that I was going to definitely bring up is that, or kind of going off what you were talking about in terms of the push-ups, when you're using the TRX or blast straps for push-ups, you know, it's not just, again, like we're talking about, the core stability aspect of it, but also the shoulder stability aspect of it. You know, that's one of the reasons why we do alternating dumbbell bench press, to increase shoulder stability, because to be honest, you know, that can be one of those, you know, little things that we need to take care of when it comes to getting stuck at a certain weight when you're benching. And if you see people that are really shaky when they bring the bar down or they bring like the dumbbell down on a bench press, oh my God, do they need to increase, you know, scapular stability? Like, that is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I will say, for myself, I use myself as an example. You know, I posted videos. I can do push-ups with pretty decent weight. I think, you know, I had like 80 pounds worth of chains or something like that on my back, you know, doing push-ups. But when I put my, you know, if I use the TRX for push-ups, like usually my hands are on the handles or blast straps for that matter, I'm usually going to be, you know, tapping out at about 12 before I get too unstable or I'm not really confident enough to keep going without, you know, being able to push myself back up, because, you know, it is just fatiguing in terms of stabilizing. So I think that's a huge benefit. Also, when it does come, you know, some people don't want to go to the gym because they hate the atmosphere. I know lots of women that don't like going into gyms, and you know what? I can understand. And they want to train at home. So when it comes to using the TRX, there's so many things you can do. Like you said, it comes with a DVD when you buy the package, but rear foot elevated split squats with a TRX are very challenging. And, you know, again, stability plays a big part in it. And I'll tell you, especially if you're going to weigh those down, in terms of the glute activation that you're going to get from just stabilizing yourself with the RFEs on those, it is pretty intense, and you'll definitely feel them the next day. Also, when it comes to doing more lower body stuff, you can even add in plyometrics, whether it be like RFE plyometrics. Like, this is something that we were doing at the Perform Better, one of the Perform Better summits. Like, they'll have you go. Actually, I think it was Cosgrove's Learn by Doing session where he had us doing rear foot elevated jumps with our foot in a TRX strap, which is, again, incredibly challenging. Mm-hmm. One of the other big things is that, you have to keep in mind that your imagination is the only thing that's going to stop you. Like, you can do, there's straps on the bottom of the TRX under the handles as well. So you can do hamstring curls. You can, mm-hmm. like you were saying, for core work, you can throw your feet in the straps and do planks, or you can do prone planks, or you can do side planks. You can mm-hmm. do rollouts. You can do, you can even do anti-rotation presses. Yep. With them, that, you know, there's been videos that have been popping up. I forget exactly who threw up the video. I don't know if it was Dewey Nielsen or who, but, you know, there's always people throwing up new and more challenging stuff that you can do. So
Dewey and Dose are both putting out a lot of TRX stuff. Yeah.
And, obviously the rows are going to be great, but don't let your imagination stop you. You can do single arm rows as well. Do jump squats, you can do overhead squats, holding onto the TRX and putting your arms overhead and squatting, not just as a challenge, but in terms of mobility, is a great movement. And, again, the only thing that's going to stop you is your imagination. So make sure you go on YouTube and go to respected trainers and coaches and see what they're doing, because there's always new stuff popping up. And you know what? Sometimes we have downtime in the gym and we like to screw around and see if we can, try out new things.
Come up with new stuff. Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, not to make this like a rolling advertisement for TRX, but.
Go to Blastraps TRX or go make your own. Lee Peel has an article on our website on how you can make your own Blastraps for like $70.
Yeah. So, but they're nice. I mean, and like I said before,
TRX is just a great package.
Yeah, it's a worthwhile tool. I mean, and again, it's like when we evaluate the fitness industry, there's always something new and exciting and everyone runs to get it and whatever. But I think this is something that'll probably stand the test of time pretty reasonably. I mean, it's, it's a nice piece of equipment and it's very versatile. So there you go.
Yeah. So I think that will cover the TRX portion. And also, I will recommend one more thing. There is also videos. There's a DVD, but I'm pretty sure you can watch the videos on YouTube of TRX movements that you can also do alongside with kettlebells. If you are going to train exclusively at home, or you're a traveling salesman, or what, and that you're going to be on the road a lot, trust me, you will have challenging workouts.
Yep.
And one more thing. Sorry. Mountain climbers, and like John said, there's lots of other stuff you can do on there. So just didn't want to forget that. All right, let's go to our next question. And I'm going to pull it up real quick right here, John. We actually got I did a quick call out at the
– On Facebook?
On Facebook and on the Twitter.
Yeah, I saw that.
And
okay.
I don't think I want to do any industry stuff because I feel bad because like half our audience is
non-industry. Although I don't know. I mean, it might be like interesting for people that are non-industry to kind of hear what goes on in the industry.
Here's a good one. This is from Matthew Dustin. He says, do whey protein supplements have enough BCAAs if you drink 2 to 3 shakes a day? Or should you still add BCAA supplementation? And the only reason I want to bring this up is that, I think John and I aren't the nutrition people on the show, but we definitely do. We know our side of nutrition as well. And I think one of the big things, that I would like to talk about is, people trying to reduce their intake of like protein powders and protein shakes mm-hmm. and not necessarily looking at them as, something you need to have or you should be taking in, and looking more at, real food. And I'll talk about this in personal experience. Like you have to remember that these whey protein powders are packed full of artificial sweeteners for the most part, unless you're, buying one that is not. And they specifically state that it is not. So you have to keep that in consideration when it comes to all the, all the stuff that you're putting into your body during the day, especially if you're also drinking some kind of like diet soda. Mm-hmm. The artificial sweeteners will add up, and there's something that has to be said about having grilled chicken, fish, beef. Like I've made a sincere effort to have grass-fed beef almost every day of the week. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really cost that much more. And
it is. I mean, I think it's a time thing.
I know it's a time thing, but
yeah. I mean, but that's all that it is. I mean, I think that like I still use protein powders for a long time. I didn't just for no reason. I just didn't, and now I do. I think there's a convenience factor, but that's pretty much about it. And you know, I think that the industry. First of all, face the facts. The industry is based on lying to you or at least over-exaggerating things.
Well, just look at the protein powder story that Lee had last week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, it's still very well known, at least within the industry, that the science versus the anecdotal, there's a huge divide between the two. I mean, science tells you that you basically need half to a quarter of what anecdotally people are telling you that you need. And it's not to say there have been a lot of call outs to how the science is conducted. So there may be some gray area in there and that we're not getting the entire truth from the science. But I do think that chances are most people don't need the amount of protein that they're probably taking if they're really like, you know, bodybuilder conscious people, you know, which means 1 to even 2 grams per pound of body weight, which is a large amount of protein. It does change, it seems, if we're on like a low carb or on a diet type of thing. There have been some evidence to protein requirements increasing and things like that. But otherwise, on a standard diet, you really should be able to get as much protein as you could possibly need from whole foods, and you just don't need protein powder. The only time I ever recommend it is if you want a convenience factor of, look, I can mix it into a shake and go, and I've got a bunch of protein. It's very convenient for post-workout. It's very convenient for on-the-go kind of stuff. But other than that, I mean, just from things like Greek yogurt and cottage cheese and some chicken in a day, and you're probably getting enough protein that you need. So it's definitely not a requirement by any means. And I don't think that I've ever heard anyone say or read anything that would claim otherwise.
And, you know, the one thing that I wanted to bring up is that you also have to make sure that you're getting, you know, plenty of the other stuff in your diet. Like, you got to make sure you're still getting fat and carbohydrates in your diet and not just relying on protein powder, because that's when things in the body, you know, hormonally can kind of go out of whack a little bit. Especially for guys, if you're not getting enough saturated fat in your diet, you can stop producing as much testosterone as you should be. And that can hurt you as well. That's why we tell you to, you know, if you are, it is kind of a different story. If you're going to be getting ready for a bodybuilding competition, you can only have egg whites and you're doing a severe cut right now. But, you know, other than that, you should eat the whole egg. You should make sure if you're making an omelet and you're a guy, just throw 4 or 5 whole eggs in there. We're talking about a total of, well, let's see, maybe 280 to, 300, I'm doing my math, 350 calories. So, just from eggs. So it's not a ton of calories when you look at your whole day. So that's just one other thing I wanted to bring up really, really quickly. But John, actually, you know what? I'm going to ask you something, because you are always posting stuff on – you read a lot of news, like health news and stuff like that. You know, what are any like current trends that you've been seeing pop up in the news? Have you been seeing good stuff or bad stuff? Or? Because I guess you post a couple stories a day almost.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I have a nice little grouping of people that send me stuff, and then I kind of search around too. And it's awesome just being able to read stuff all the time now. That's interesting trend. See, you know, I don't know that it's trends as much as it's just more evidence for things. I've been getting a lot of good coffee stories lately, which makes me feel so wonderful because I love coffee. But trends. I mean, I don't think so. I think what I find the most interesting, though, about a lot of the stories that I post are the things that are challenging kind of the way that we think about exercise and about physiology. The stories that intrigue me the most are the ones that, you know, really call into question stuff that we thought was true. You know, like just the other day, I mean, this isn't something new, but just I think just a few hours ago, I'd posted something about running sneakers and how, you know, we're already kind of thinking that maybe running sneakers aren't all they're cracked up to be. The movement for barefoot running, you know, there's growing evidence every day for the possibility that barefoot running might be an advantage for certain people. And, you know, this was yet another story about talking about how the price of sneakers do not correlate at all with injury prevention. And in fact, there seems to be some evidence that more expensive sneakers might actually be more harmful for your body overall than cheaper sneakers. And it's stuff like that that I find the most interesting. You know, it doesn't really, you know, pique my interest if it's like, oh, you know, study shows that weight training increases muscle mass. Like, no kidding. But, you know, it's the studies or the articles that point out that, you know, that exercise doesn't help you lose weight, or not unless it's in combination with diet. Those are the things that are interesting. Even if we find out that maybe there was something lacking to that study and that later research might, you know, argue against it, I still think it's interesting just to stop for a second and say, huh, what if that's true? You know, and I think that it allows you as a professional to be a little bit more humble in what you think is right and wrong, and what you preach to your clients or to your patients or whatever. You know, that's why I've had a few people through discussions point out that I never say this is true, this is not true. And then the fact is, it's because I don't really know if things are true. We just have evidence to suggest that it is. But tomorrow this major, you know, type of study could come out and maybe I was wrong after all. So I think that's what's exciting about this field for me. And those are the types of things that I find interesting in trends.
Well, there's two cool things that you brought up that I wanted to talk about. And the first thing is that I still think it is somewhat of a myth that some people still believe, is that, you know, exercise does not burn that many calories, mm-hmm. or an hour of weight training does not burn that many calories. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, we're talking about maybe, you know, if we're also going to talk about EPOC or the, you know, the afterburn effect, you're only going to be talking maybe 500 calories in an hour's worth of weight training. Mm-hmm. But again, you're not just looking at the benefits of the calories that are burned. You're also looking at lean muscle mass increases. You're looking at the overall health benefits of lower blood pressure and lower heart rate and things like that. So yeah. I think that, you know, when I see stories like that, you know, weightlifting does not help you lose weight, I'm like, no, I know. I think, like, people still think, like, oh, you know, I had cake today, so I'm going to jump on the treadmill for 20 minutes, do some intervals. Yeah. No.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing is, too, the studies that are coming out that are showing that exercise isn't as valuable typically don't have nutritional controls.
Exactly.
And that's a good point, because in the real world, plenty of people will go and exercise and not control their diet.
Or they'll eat worse.
That's absolutely right. Or they'll eat worse. So it's almost like a no-brainer. But again, that's an interesting point, because people either think, well, I'm exercising all the time, so who cares? And they don't even notice that they're eating more, mm-hmm. or that they're saying, you know what, I like to eat too much, so I'm just going to exercise and try to do my best. Now, on the other side of things, there's a lot of research that's coming out talking about the idea of the healthy fat individual, the healthy obese, they're right. There's a certain group of people that have the, you know, the BMI, if you know that's what they're using as measurement, but they have the BMI, the body fat, whatever, the markings of an obese individual, and yet they're cardiovascular and by all measures of health, they're absolutely healthy. And more times than not, you do find that they're exercising. So exercise does appear to be a really strong factor in overall health, and it can even trump the idea of a poor diet. But that's not to say that, you know, well, you should just, you know, it doesn't matter if you're exercising, you'll be healthy, because it's not the case. There are people that exercise and still obviously have health problems, but it does show how powerful exercise can be. And the evidence is also very clear that when you compare exercise alone, diet alone, and exercise and diet combined, the exercise and diet wins out always. And it wins out most importantly in body fat lost and muscle tissue and lean mass preserved. So even what you tend to see is that the body fat losses are usually somewhat similar between a diet group and then the diet and the exercise group. But the diet exercise group just retains a lot more muscle, which is a very important real world thing, not only in what we think would be injury prevention, but also just looking good, mm-hmm. you know? So, I do think that, that research is important because it does help us as professionals with the things that we prescribe and the advice that we give out, you know, otherwise it's like, you know, we're going to think, well, you're exercising, so it doesn't matter. And I've heard trainers tell that to clients, and it's not entirely true. You do have to have dietary controls. But what it also says is that if you're really bad at dieting, maybe there's somewhere in between that you can fall. Because if I just maintain a relatively healthy diet without overeating and I exercise, as long as I control what I'm eating and I don't eat additional, it may be enough to lose weight. But if I exercise and I don't control at all, then the evidence also suggests that we will naturally start to eat more to compensate because our body is interested in homeostasis. It wants to keep what it's got. It doesn't want change. So our body will do all kinds of things to try to maintain that non-change event. You know, so if you increase your exercise, it'll basically make you hungrier to want to eat more. And so now that we really kind of understand that and have a better idea of it, and it's not the case where, well, if I just exercise, I'll lose weight automatically, it helps us to be more effective at what we're doing, even if we accept, you know, for some people, diet is a tough thing. Or for others, diet is easier for them, but exercise is tough. So then how much exercise do you need? Maybe you don't need too much. Maybe you just need a little bit to maintain that muscle mass, because the other side of it is that exercise, you know, alone isn't going to be as helpful as the diet, arguably, although me and Cass were talking about that, you know, 2 weeks ago. But you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting stuff. I think that stuff is pretty important to really, you know, hone us in on how can we be most effective at our health goals and our, you know, body composition goals.
I did mention, mention two things. And the other thing was the, for people out there, we're talking about footwear a couple of minutes ago. In terms of footwear, if you either can't find them or you think the Nike Freeze are too expensive, Adidas makes a shoe called the Adidas Fluid Trainer. And it is a Nike Free, and it is much better quality than the Nike shoe. And the grip on the if you've ever owned Nike Freeze, you'll know that the grips on the bottom just tear right off if you do anything like sled pushes. So I highly recommend the Adidas Fluid Trainer. You can get them for about $70 and much nicer shoe. So
there's something else I wanted to add too that you reminded me of. I was having a conversation with my mother, I don't know, like last week or something, and she reminded me something that I told her, I guess years ago. I didn't remember saying it, but – and I probably stole it from somewhere. So someone might write in an email being like, you stole that from Alan Cosgrove. I don't know. But probably. You had said something about – yeah, right. You had said something about you know, someone has a piece of cake and then they go out and they try to do exercise. They try to make up for it. And that concept I think is very flawed. And what my mother told me that I told her was, you know, if you think about it, how many meals do you have in a day? Do you have 3 meals? Do you have 4 meals, 5 meals, whatever? So let's just say you have 3 square a day. So in a week, you've got 21 meals. If you blow one meal, you had a piece of cake, whatever, that's 1/20. It's 5% of your total week. That's still an A in any college course you take. You know, 95 is still an A. Now, however, if you try to undo it, oh, well, I'm going to undereat here or I'm going to do whatever there, now you're compounding more. Now you're compounding 2 meals, 3 meals, whatever it is. And I've had people tell me that, oh, I broke down, I had cake, so I didn't eat the rest of the day. Well, now you just blew 3 meals, you know. So it's just – I think that it's a small point, but I think that it's a helpful point to just look at it from the math point of view. You blew one meal, not a big deal. Move on, get over it, don't do it again. In fact, it can also be helpful too because it's the idea of the cheat meal. You know, that's why you know, many nutritionists say it's not harmful to have a cheat meal once a week as long as it's not a ridiculous meal. Have a little bit if you feel the urge to indulge in some chocolate and some ice cream, whatever. Have a good time because in the scheme of things, it's not a huge percentage of what you're doing. And if you're good the rest of the week, it doesn't matter. So if you have that moment, you break down, you're at a party, you swear you're not going to do anything, and then you have a beer and a slice of pizza, you know what? Get over it. Move on. By the end of the week, you're not going to notice it even happened. So, but when we try to make up for bad behavior, when they're singular events, we're probably compounding it and making it worse.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you preface that, because I was going to say, you know, some people are, you know, you'll get, whether it's clients or we'll get questions sent in, but saying, oh, I only have one cheat meal a week. But then you ask what that cheat meal is, it's like, oh, you know, Sunday we had the guys over, so, you know, I had pizza and wings, and I had like, you know, like 5 or 6 beers in the course of the day, and then we went out to dinner, and I had burger and fries, and, you know, we had dessert, so I got, you know, a piece of pie, and then we got home, you know, we still had some food left over, so I had some pizza, and then we, you know, went to bed.
Right, they just
passed out from
the coma. They went nuts, yeah. And that's true, and it's not to say that you shouldn't, you know, one meal once a week in an otherwise well-structured week isn't a big deal. Consistent cheating, breaking down, cheating on your, you know, diet or on your work, you know, skipping workouts or whatever, that's a problem, you know. And actually, I cheat during the week too. I just try to cheat healthy, you know. I try to have stuff that at least is reasonably healthy and not go completely nuts. If I'm sitting around and I'm craving something, I'll, you know, go in and have, you know, some fruit, some, you know, things that are sweet that give me a sugar rush, but at least there's some fiber with it. At least that's like a good cheat. I don't think that it really matters, honestly. Like if I had the chocolate laying around, then I'd probably have that. But the fact of the matter is I don't have the chocolate laying around, because then I definitely would cheat. I can't stand that stuff in the house. If it's there, I'm going to eat it. So I think that if you have an otherwise good plan and you stick to that plan, and every once in a while you're just like, you know what, I'm bored and I'm gonna have a piece of chocolate, and it's not a terribly consistent thing, it's not going to be a big deal. But if it's happening every day, every other day, you're skipping workouts, you're having, you know, more food than you're supposed to, and you're not going through your process, then yeah, it's going to be a problem. But the other side of it is, like I said, don't try to make up for it. Try to solve the problem. If you're cheating every day on your diet, then you've got to rethink either your commitment to your diet or the way that you're dieting. Maybe there's another way to do it that you'll find more satisfying and be able to stick to. But if it's a once in a week thing, just move on. Who cares? And at least take it as a lesson, saying, you know what, this is a moment I had weakness. I succumbed to that weakness. Next time I'm going to try some different strategies so that either I don't break down and have that, you know, 5 pieces of cake, or if I do want cake, then I'm going to be reasonable about it and allow myself, you know, a small portion of it. And then the rest of the week, I'm okay with it. I don't punish myself for it. I don't feel badly for it. And I just move forward.
And the one thing I'm just going to add on top of that is, you know, like John said, it, you know, having one thing is not going to kill you. But I think that rule kind of depends on the person that you're going to be talking to, because I know there's some personalities out there that, you know, you put a crack in the dam, and then, mm-hmm. you know, the water's going to just keep coming in, and then the cracks are going to get bigger, bigger, bigger. And throughout the day, they're just going to get, you know, they're just going to keep eating throughout the day. So I think there's some people that just need to say, no cheat meals. Like, you know, maybe for like the holidays, but you have to like stay on a strict regimen, because you know that day is going to be ruined, and then you're going to say the day is ruined, so I'm going to keep eating.
Absolutely.
And then we go from a, you know, 1,000 calorie meal or a 1,500 calorie meal to an 8,000 calorie day.
Right. And I think there are other – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say John Fast for president.
Oh, thanks. And I was going to say also that there are two things come out of that. You know, you have to the best thing, most success comes from success. You know what I mean? You have to get the momentum going. You have to form habits. And I think that, just like you said, Kev, I mean, someone, it's like they're going, they're doing well. Then they have that one cheat meal, or it's Thanksgiving or Christmas or New Year's, whatever it is, they blow the diet and then they never seem to return. You have to look at the long-term goals at that point, and you have to look at the big picture. If you blew it, don't just start getting, you know, that feeding frenzy feeling again and wanting to go back to the old lifestyle. Just pick yourself up and move forwards again. The more success that you see, the more that you're going to want to continue that success. So if those you know, stumbles happen early on, that's part of the process. I'm going to even say for myself, I mean, getting back into shape after grad school and after, I mean, I wasn't in horrible shape in grad school. The residency absolutely killed me. And getting back into shape was a long process in the beginning of things. You know, it was frustrating, you know, knowing where I had been to seeing where I was in terms of my, you know, physical appearance, is in terms of my abilities in the gym and what I could do, getting out of breath after a freaking set. You know, I mean, it was frustrating. But I also knew what the long-term goals were, and I also knew the fact that, you know, this is the right process, and eventually I'm going to see my results. And the further along you go and the better you're feeling, the better you're looking, the more that you want to continue. It's to the point that now, where cheating was pretty often for me in the beginning, because I was used to eating a certain way and I'd gotten, you know, pretty lazy with the way that I'd eat, and here's a little dessert and here's a little whatever. And now it's to the point where I look at that same type of meal offerings, I'm like, dude, I don't want to want this. This is going to ruin my progress. And I think that you have to be aware that that will probably take place, and that you have to ride the storm in the beginning to see, you know, the sunrise the next day. You know what I mean? You just have to run through that and be aware that the beginning will be challenging, and you just have to continue to be committed to your goals. And eventually it does start to become easier as you become more used to this new lifestyle. It's just forming a habit. That's all it is. So you have to give that habit time. If you blow it, just get right back on and go back to it. And no matter how many times you screw up in the beginning, just keep moving forwards. And eventually those mistakes will happen less and less, because you're just going to be used to the lifestyle. And unfortunately, we lose so many people in the beginning because they feel like they can't do it, or, you know, they've tried a million times. And it's like the old George Burns quote, where quitting smoking is easy, I've done it hundreds of times. I feel it's the same way with a lot of people in dieting, where they diet, then they screw up, so they get back on, but then they screw up again. But the problem is that they allow themselves to languish in that, you know, non-diet, non-health region for so long, that it's not that they diet and fail and diet and fail. They diet and then continue to fail, and then recommit and then continue to fail. You have to make the commitment to health more prominent in your life than the times where you're not committed to health, so that you're changing your lifestyle and making decisions that are going to affect the big picture, not the small picture.
I'm going to get in the final word on this one.
Word.
And I'm going to say that, you know, with all that being said, always remember, we talk about what's the best way to eat or the best diet out there, and it's always going to be the one that you're going to be able to stick to, whether it's you know, it can be a high carb, low fat diet. It can be a ketogenic diet. It can just be, you know, a low carb diet. It can be high protein, high carb diet, and low fat, whatever. You know, it's whatever you can live with and stick to, and not, you know, fall off the wagon often of, I stumbled there. But anyways, John, I think that's going to do it for this cool, glorious 197th episode.
197, dude.
Starts sounding like a lot now, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's like more than 200 weeks, because it's not always consistently by week.
Yeah, that's true. I think, well, we passed our four-year thing, so that would be 8 weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Crazy.
We're getting old.
When did me and Lee start?
Like 130 something.
Huh.
Maybe 140.
Crazy. Was it 140? I don't know.
We're like Saturday Night. It was like a Halloween. We just roll through cast members.
Yeah, pretty much. That keeps it youthful and fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, that actually reminds me, John. This is your last show, by the way.
Oh, hooray.
Yep.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'd like to thank my parents for all their support, for Kevin for giving me the chance. And, you know, I'll see you on the other side.
Yeah, we're going to have Justin Bieber on the show next week talking about self-myofascial release.
What is that, the Late Late Show? Does Justin Bieber – have you been watching that?
No.
Dude, on the Late Late Show, I think, with you know, what's his name?
Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, Jimmy Fallon. He does like a Justin Bieber thing where it's like it's hysterical. You can find it on YouTube, and it's just – it's hysterical, like – it's like, yo, yo, this is Justin Bieber and what's up? And yo, I want to talk about the housing bubble, yo. I mean, it's crazy. And like, and he just starts breaking down like all these crazy things. That it's hysterical. It's, you have to watch it, but it's really funny.
Is it Jimmy Fallon as Justin Bieber?
Yeah.
Dude, and then that like, it'll just so underrated, like, man.
He'll like talk about something and then they'll cut to him dancing. And it's just, it's hysterical. It's like, it's pretty damn funny.
Oh, and also Emma Stone was on SNL last night. I didn't watch it. I went to bed early, but she and I are getting married. Just wanted to know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Emma Stone. By the way, you know, there was there was a good question about time under tension. I think we should visit that next week.
Well, how about you write that down, John?
I'm not writing anything down. You're the producer.
You know what? I'll write it myself and we'll do it live. Okay. Do you have to blank that out? I kind of blanked it out. All right. 3, 2, 1. We're done with the podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And
that was the first time you ever counted down the end. That's,
I know.
Awesome.
I don't know why I did that. Don't forget to check out the Ficcast on iTunes. Please subscribe there and leave a review if positive. If not, you can call John at 781-493-1834.
Yeah.
So you can. I'm so sorry, whoever's number that is.
Yeah, last week to get on like my Facebook or Cast, because I think we're sending out the first questionnaire probably like next week or something.
Sell something,
so
John.
I'm very much trying to sell something. So,
Again, like I said, you know, we will be in contact later this week, and we'll have episode number 198. Maybe I can get a guest for it. I actually have time this week. I'm so sorry we haven't had a guest on the last couple weeks. All right, so that is it. Don't forget to stick around for the off topic, where John and I talk about how we decided to not sleep with women and play video games.
God, I wish you were lying, but it's true. I wish that was a lie. I was young.
We just have high standards. Link over Linda, you know?
Yeah, I was young and stupid. Well, at least it wasn't for like Dungeons and Dragons or like
Yeah, well, my thing was like 3 years ago.
Yeah, at least mine was like 10 years ago, dude.
It's like Xbox 360. You're talking about PlayStation 2.
Nice.
All right. All right, we're in the off-topic discussion. We're going to be doing a quick off-topic today, and I'm with Jonathan Fast. John, what's up?
Yo, yo, yo.
Hey, I went to see Back to the Future yesterday on the big screen.
Yes, you did. Was it everything you'd hoped for and more?
It was actually a lot of fun, and it was I actually probably laughed watching it in the theater more than I have at home in a long time, because obviously you're with a bunch of people who like are waiting for the same moments that you are.
Right. So there was a collective excitement in the air.
Yeah, the audience was interesting, though. It was an interesting crowd of people.
Were they all dressed up like Marty McFly?
Two people dressed up as like Doc Brown and Marty McFly and stuff. But like it was just.
Now, what do you like if you're one of those two people and you find out you're the only person dressed up? Like, does that embarrass you, or do you think?
No,
like,
it was a lot of fun. It wasn't a hostile environment or anything like
that. No. But I mean, you as the individual, like when you walk in, like I'm kind of picturing the idea of like when you go to the Halloween party dressed up and you're the only one dressed up because it turns out that no one else, that you're the only one that didn't get the memo. You know what I mean? Like one of those,
I guess,
like
you just got to have, you know, enough confidence to pull it off,
I guess.
But yeah, along with that, we also got limited edition posters
that I posted
on Facebook and Twitter.
That's cool.
And because I bought 4 tickets, thinking that I was going to go invite 3 people, and I forgot that I thought the movie was next weekend. So I ended up just going with my brother, and I went in there and I'm like, can I bought 3 tickets. Can you, I mean, I have 2 extra tickets, so I got 3 posters for one person. Everyone's like, what the fuck is that kid? Oh, damn. Why is that kid getting 3 posters?
Ah.
And I would have thought the same thing. I'm like, I want 3 posters, son.
You should have turned to them and been like, I got 3 seats because my shoulders are so wide.
So I'm so jacked.
Jacked.
All right, so that was that, and also I worked the rest of the day, so I didn't really do much, and I think that is about it. And the traffic going to Salem or going to see the movie was horrible because everyone thinks they have to go to Salem on Halloween a week before Halloween.
Mm,
there was like, sense. It was like, took me 10 minutes to get past two exits going past Salem.
That's a pretty cool poster.
It is. It's a badass poster. And it's like it's the official like 40 by, 20, whatever it is. So I have to get a frame for it.
That's incredible.
I know. So that is that. And we got some football today.
Yes, we do.
And Jets are playing today, right? No, you're a Giants fan, right?
I am a Giants fan.
Cool.
And I thought, did you see I ran home last night so I could watch the 8 o'clock game, just realized that it was Saturday and not Sunday. Sunday. And then it was pointed out to me that, no, they're playing Monday night. And I was like, damn it.
Well, it's just all because you live in beep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I blanked
at least
out
I knew. Preemptively. It's amazing that I even knew that they were playing.
Yeah. Did you catch into the UFC?
No, I didn't. The UFC is on. If there is, like, I think that you can get it here.
You can watch it on the internet. I'm like,
you can watch it on the internet.
Stream.
But it's really, really like either late or in the night or early in the morning, depending on how you look at it. So it's like, even if I wanted to watch it, it's pretty difficult to do.
So what time zone are you in? Do you want to give people a hint?
No, but it's a good one. It's a good time zone.
Some of the better ones.
One of the better ones, and it really just, it's like, forget about it. It's just, it's nuts.
Cool.
So I'm on a totally different schedule, so.
Oh, you know what I did? And I don't know if you've seen this or not yet, but I around maybe 9 o'clock last night, I started watching Watchmen, the director's cut, because I've had it on Blu-ray for so long and I haven't watched it, but I've seen the movie twice before.
For sure.
I love that movie. It's a great movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
But I'm like, after all the director stuff, it's like 3 hours and 20 minutes long. And like an hour and a half in, I'm like, holy crap. Like, I just can't do it in one night.
Yeah, you got to kill yourself. Have you read the comic?
No, I never touched the comics.
The comic is very good.
I can watch it.
The comic is very good. Very, very good.
I'm dead serious, dude. I don't even like read at all anymore. I've been just doing audiobooks. Like, I go through at least 2.5 books a month through Audible. And I just, it's much more enjoyable to listen to it in the car, like on the way to work and or home from work.
Yeah, one of my friends got it for me after we saw the movie as like a gift, and it's a great comic. I mean, it is like, the movie's very good, but, and I'm glad I did it the way that I did, where I saw the movie first and then read the comic, because I understand where people read the comic first and then saw the movie and were disappointed by the movie, because it's like, you can never do that. You know what I mean? It's like so rare that a movie is better than the material that it's based on. Mm-hmm. And it really was very, very well done comic book.
Well, I'm very excited, because I think they are like still in talks about making a sequel, and I think they could, they could do something with that. Dude, Dr. Manhattan's still a dick. I still don't like him. And also one other thing that I want to mention, in terms of Back to the Future stuff, is that, Telltale is making a new game, and there's some awesome videos on GameTrailers.com with the, guy, with Michael, the guy who's basically doing Michael J. Fox's voice, because Michael J. Fox can't do it.
Right.
Because you have to read thousands and thousands of lines of dialogue for a video game. It's much more involving than a movie. Mm-hmm. So they got this like sound alike who actually sounds pretty close, and Christopher Lloyd is returning, so it's a good sign.
Favorite video game of all time, Kevin?
My favorite video game of all time? It would probably be, in terms of the experience that I had, would probably be The Legend of Zelda. And now I'm trying to figure out which. I'm trying to decide which. It's either between Link to the Past and Ocarina of Time, but it's probably Ocarina of Time. Because I got that game. Quick story. I don't mean to cut in, but I got that game on Christmas Eve. My grandmother got it for me. She got me like the limited gold edition. It came with like a T-shirt and everything. It was like $80.
Right.
And that, it's like, and it was 1997, $80. So
right.
So she's like, yeah, by the way, this is also your birthday gift for this year. And I'm like, fine. Okay. And we have this Christmas Eve party every year at their house. And, you know, I get this gift and I'm like, we have to get home right now. Stop talking. Stop eating, everyone. We're going home right now. And I think I stayed up until about midnight that morning. And then I woke up again at 5 a.m. and I started playing again. And I didn't even want to open up my other presents. I didn't. I didn't even care. And I'm still a kid. That I am 24 years old, and I still wake up at about 6 a.m. waiting for people to get up to open presents. And that was the 1 year that I was like, no, hold on, five more minutes. And that was just a completely different. You know, it was a completely different experience than I've ever had. With a game, so yeah, it has to be either that or the day we on Christmas Day when we got that Super Nintendo with Super Mario World was pretty amazing too. I'll never forget that.
Classics.
Oh, dude, I mean, classics. I can't wait. We're playing. I got someone coming over today, and we're gonna play some Super Mario Brothers 3 on my PlayChoice 10.
Sweet.
We're gonna be going back and forth, Mario Luigi.
Sweet.
So, what about you, John? You like adventure games. Did you play Fallout 3?
No, I haven't. Actually, I have like a bunch of games that were given to me as gifts before I left, but I didn't have room to take my PS3. So the next time I come home, I'm bringing it, and I got all these games that I'm like dying to get my hands on. But yeah, I haven't played that yet. I'm going to pick up like a whole bunch and just like stock up on things to do. So, although now these days, like, actually trying to get this, you know, writing together. I don't even know when I'm going to have time for that, but whatever.
Who needs to write?
Yeah. Favorite game. Favorite game is probably Summoner. Yeah, I loved that game, and here's my story, all right? Although, like, things like Zelda and the original Metroid and, you know, like, all those are, like, unbelievable.
That was, like, an original PS2 game, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, it was an original PS2 game.
It was like the first year the PS2 was out.
Yeah, it was. And it was like, and I think that the reason why I love it so much is because before that, like a role-playing adventure game kind of thing, that was like, in my opinion, that was one of the first games that kind of stylized the way that the games are made now. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the story was so complete and the world was like, you could explore everything. Like, you know, the way that games are made now, that was definitely the first game that I played that was like that, and I was like blown away. I couldn't believe like how detailed everything was. It was just so much fun. The follow-up sucked. I was so disappointed, but the first one was great. So here's my story, and I can't believe I'm going to tell you this story, but I'm going to say it anyway. I may have told you this once. I was dating a girl at the time, and we were it was kind of a new relationship, but you know, it was kind of moving, but I think I was probably like getting disinterested at the point. But we were supposed to hang out that weekend, and that was kind of like, you know, the weekend. Like, we were going to do what the Yankees couldn't do in the ALCS, which is hit a home run, if you follow my meaning. So I'm sitting there. I just graduated college. I'd moved back in with my parents, and I think she was like in her final year of college. I don't remember what it was. But so she's down there, and she calls me up, and I'm playing this game. And she's like, hey, you know, you coming down, you know, and whatever. And it was just starting to snow out because it was around Christmas time. And I'm playing this game. I'm not even listening to what she's saying. I'm such a jerk. And I was like, yeah, you know, I mean, my mom's kind of like, she doesn't really want me to drive right now because the weather's supposed to get bad. And of course, my mother. And this girl's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I mean, it just, I don't want to upset her or whatever. And she's like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Let me just call you back. You know, and I got like the phone on my shoulder while I'm playing. You know, and I'm like, let me just call you back. Let me call you back. And she's like yelling at me. She's like, are you out of your mind? What are you? You know? And she's like all upset. And I'm like, okay, let me just call you back. And I hang up. And I just keep playing. And then I stop. I pause it. And I stop. And I'm like, did I just pass up sex for the PlayStation 2? And I was like, yeah, I did. Okay, I guess this is over. I just kept playing.
I laugh hard because I had the same experience with Gears of War.
And of course, now in my wisdom, I look back at that going, what the hell was I thinking? But at the time, it made sense.
Dude, I know. But you're like, oh my God, there's not. I mean, that's going to be great for like 30 minutes or whatever, but I can play this for hours. And I got my 64 ounce of orange soda next to me, you know?
You know what? At least the way that I look at that is it's a great story, and then at least it shows that I have some, you know, respect and integrity that I wouldn't just use a girl for a physical encounter. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really into the relationship at that point, and I think that kind of sealed the deal for me.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, it was so sad. I look back at it, and I'm like, what was wrong with me?
Dude, but men are irrational. You know, humans are irrational. We are, you know, it's all about irrational behavior these days. I hear this book about it. All right, so I think that's going to be our topic. Hopefully the ladies out there enjoyed it and the men can understand.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of feedback for that one. I can't believe I told that story.
Send it in, emails.
Yeah.